Chapter 2. A specific area of technical expertise. There were four of them, Max and three others, two men and a woman.
"I made you this,"
the other woman said. She put a tin mug down on the table beside Drusha. She was a finely made woman with very dark skin, her hair tight pinned around her head. Drusha could not guess her age. 30, perhaps. She wore gloves and an embroidered cerise jacket.
"What is it?"
Drusha asked, dabbing at his split lip.
"Caffeine," she said.
"I don't have any caffeine," he replied. The woman frowned and gestured towards the kitchen.
"Brown powder, silver tin, second shelf, marked caffeine."
"A sample of desiccated tree fox droppings for analysis," said Drusha. She nodded, thoughtfully, then shrugged.
"Probably better not drink it then," she advised.
They had brought him inside and allowed him to get dressed. The bald man had not given him back his gun. Drusha's mouth, jaw, and neck hurt from the blow that had knocked him down. He was fiddling with his spectacles, but the frames were still bent. No one had even said sorry. Max came in, pulled out the other chair, and sat facing Drusha. He hadn't seen her in 15 years. Her short hair was just beginning to lose its depth of color, but she still looked good. He could see the tiny zigzag scar above the left-hand side of her mouth, and the trace of the other scar on her forehead. Both were old now, faded, like memories. She wore the uniform of a magistrate and marshal. Beside her, he felt ancient.
"I heard you retired," he said.
"Didn't suit me," she said. "The division was understaffed, so I took reassignment."
"Tycho City?"
She shook her head.
"Ankara province, up north."
He nodded, as if that meant something.
"Still a silly bastard, I see," she said. "When someone knocks on your door, you don't run away and attack them with eagles."
"You do out here," said Drusha.
She raised her eyebrows.
"Why are you living like this, Valentin? In this dump? Alone?"
"Well, odd as it may sound, there is very little in the way of paid work available for a highly qualified Magos biologist on Gershom," he said. "A fact that I have wrestled with for, let me see now, 34 years, and a detail I wish I had been aware of when, as a young man with splendid prospects, I took the commission to do a survey of the planet's indigenous fauna, and ended up stuck here for the rest of my—"
"Don't start," she said.
He opened his mouth to carry on, but he saw the look on her face. It was a self-pitying rant she'd heard from him too many times. He cleared his throat.
"It also appears from experience," he said, less emphatically, "that I do not make for sparkling company, and so an isolated existence is better for everyone. Someone once told me I'd be happier alone, or that I'd make others happier if I was alone. I don't recall precisely. There was a lot of shouting and door-slamming."
Max sighed and looked away.
"Did you train that eagle?"
Drusha glanced around. The younger, blonde man was sitting on a bench in the corner. He was holding a dressing to the gashes on his cheek and neck.
"It was a sea raptor," said Drusha.
"What?"
asked the blonde man.
"A sea raptor, not an eagle. Gortus gortus geshomi."
"Uh-huh," said the man. "I asked if you trained it."
"No."
"Then a control implant of some kind?"
"No."
"Is he Saikana?"
asked the bald man. He was suddenly standing in the doorway behind Drusha.
"No, he's not," said Max.
"Good," said the bald man, "because, you know—"
"I let a wild thing out, and you were in the way," said Drusha to the younger, blonde man.
"But you knew Varier was in the way," said the bald man, "and you knew what would happen."
"Yes,"
said Drusha. He hesitated, then looked over at the blonde man.
"I'm sorry," he said.
Varier shrugged.
"It's fine," he replied. "It was smart thinking, actually." "Yeah,"
growled the bald man.
"If we'd been a road mob, you'd have eagled the crap out of us."
"What is this about?"
Drusha asked. He was looking directly at Max, the only person in the room he felt he could consider a friend, and even then, not much of one.
"Who are these people?"
The blonde man got to his feet. With his free hand, he took out a rosette and showed it to Drusha.
"Interrogator Dara Vorier, Ordo Hereticus," he said. "These are my associates, Medea Betancourt and Harlan Nail."
Valentin Drusha didn't hear much beyond the word Ordo. It felt as though a trap door had opened under him, and plunged him into a world where there would never, ever be enough anxiety meds.
"We have need of assistance," said Nail, the big, bald man. "A specific area of technical expertise. You came highly recommended."
"By the Marshal, I presume?" asked Drusha, wiping his lips. Max had produced a hip flask of Amasek and let Drusha take a swig to steady his nerves.
"Yes," said Vorier.
"I don't do consultations," said Drusha.
"What are you, retired?" sneered Nail. "Living in your beachfront property? Training eagles?"
No.
"I think I just heard you complaining there were piss-all opportunities for employment here on Gershom," said Nail.
"Does this pay?" asked Drusha.
"Yes," said Nail, "in the form of deep satisfaction and pride at having served the Emperor of Mankind and his Inquisition."
"I thought so," said Drusha.
"There's a stipend and expenses," said Vorier.
"Is there?"
"Maybe," said Nail. "Name a fee. Bear in mind you're laboring under the false impression that you have any choice in this. The Inquisition needs your help. It's not a yes-no option."
Drusha looked across the table at Max. Panic was beginning to set in.
"Why did you bring these people here?" he hissed. "What have you got me into? Why are you doing this to me again?"
"They need a Magus Biologus, Valentin," she said.
"Well, they can find someone else," said Drusha. "I'm not going to get dragged into another one of your insane adventures."
"Come on, Valentin. Outer Urdar was fun. And Tycho City? We went to the zoo."
"So, you have history?"
asked Medea Betancourt.
"We do," said Max, "which is why I brought him to you." "A history of insane adventures," said Betancourt, "in, what was it, Outer Urdar, and—"
"It's possible he was referring to the 3 years we were married," said Max. Nail snorted.
"It's not funny," said Drusha.
"I'm absolutely certain it wasn't," said Nail. "For her."
Drusha got up and tried to appear dignified.
"Look, sir," he said, "I am a Magos biologist. I study flora and fauna, make taxonomies. I have been here on Gershom for more than 30 years. I wish I hadn't been, but there you go. It's not much of a life. However, it's what I do. Twice in the past, Marshal Max has co-opted my assistance in certain matters. The last time was 20 years ago. They were dangerous experiences, very much outside my wheelhouse. I do not wish to repeat them. Ever. So, I suggest you look for somebody more qualified to help with whatever it is you're doing."
"Thing is," said Nail, "there's no one more qualified. Not in this system. No one else even qualified, period. You're the only Magos biologist. Marshal Max didn't recommend you because she thought you were particularly good. She recommended you because you were the only Magos biologist she knew."
Drusha sat down again. Max looked at Nail sharply.
"You really didn't have to tell him that," she said.
Nail shrugged.
"I know what he's like," Max went on. "He'll mope now. Sulk. We'll never get him to cooperate."
"Wow," murmured Drusha. "You're making it better all the time."
"I'll make him cooperate," said Nail.
Betancourt raised a gloved hand.
"First of all," she said, "we're on a clock. He's waiting for us. I don't want to keep him waiting much longer, do you? And I'd rather we brought this gentleman along in a cooperative frame of mind than drag him unwillingly. So there must be something he wants, something that will make it worthwhile for him."
"He wants to get off this planet," said Max. Drusha looked at her. She was serious. "He's wanted nothing more since the day I met him. One-way passage."
"Where do you want to go?"
asked Vorier. Drusha swallowed hard.
"Anywhere,"
he said quietly.
"Anywhere that isn't here."
Vorier looked at Betancourt.
"We can do that. Get him somewhere. Gudrun?
Thracian Primaris?"
"You'd pay for a travel bond?" asked Drusha.
"We've got a ship," said Betancourt.
Drusha began packing some belongings in an old Munitorum kit bag. His house was full of clutter, but when it came down to it, there were very few items he felt he had to take. His journals, the manuscript of his taxonomy, his sketchbooks. He wasn't sure any of that even mattered, but he felt obliged to take them. Something to show he hadn't entirely wasted the previous 34 years.
"What is the issue?"
he asked Nail.
"Wildlife problem, up north. Unkara province."
"And the work involves?"
insane adventures. You won't like it.
I will be resolved. I can be resolved, you know.
When the offer is right, said Nail.
Drusha stiffened. I'm not a mercenary, he said. Nail shrugged.
I am, he replied.
He looked at Drusha.
Just to be fair, he said, you say you've had insane adventures.
I have.
I'm sure. I'm also sure that whatever escapades you and the Marshal have enjoyed in the past, they're nothing. Nothing compared to what we do.
You underestimate what...
No,
said Nail. Then you're boasting.
Not that either. I'm just trying to tell it to you straight, in all fairness. This isn't going to be like anything you've known before.
It must be like something I've known, sir, said Drusha, or you wouldn't need my expertise. Nail thought about that.
Well, you know animals, he admitted. You know how to let a wild thing out of a cage, and what will happen when you do. This is going to be like that, only in reverse.
Putting something back in a cage?
Mm-hmm. We'll do the heavy graft. We just need expertise, identification, insight, that sort of thing.
Drusha fastened the kit bag.
Ready?
Nail asked. Yes, said Drusha. He paused. No, wait. Cages. You reminded me. I'll be right back. 2 minutes. He went outside, to the back of the property. It was nearly dawn. The sky had turned mauve over the white dunes. It almost looked beautiful. Typical, Drusha thought, now that I'm finally leaving. He went to the pens and opened the cages one by one, shooing out the tarkanils and the seabirds. He couldn't leave them caged up and not come back. He threw down some feed for them, and they started to peck, strutting around the little yard, warily. They'd have to fend for themselves. It wasn't kind, but it was kinder than leaving them penned up to starve. He looked at the property. He wasn't coming back. He wouldn't miss it. He realized he was being watched. The sea raptor was perched on a fence strut at the top of the dunes. It should have been down the coast by now, or out to sea, but there it was, watching him. Drusha took off his spectacles, cleaned the lenses on the hem of his shirt so he could see better, and put them back on. The sea raptor ruffled its wings, then spread them and powered down in one long swoop, landing on the ridge of the pens above him. It clacked its proud beak. Drusha smiled.
So, all those months of being a bastard, he said to it softly, and you wanted to stay after all? You could have sat on the back of my chair at night, watched me work. Go on, Mal. You're free.
The raptor tilted its head and studied him.
Go on, he said. I'm going. You can go too. But thanks for seeing me off and everything.
The raptor tilted its head the other way and opened its beak. He could see the sharp spear of its tongue. Such a majestic creature. So it stooped from the roof ridge into the yard, killed one of the pecking tarkanils outright, and took off with it in its talons. He watched it fly away into the dawn sky, lugging the limp prey with hefty beats of its wings. A few tarkanil feathers drifted in the air around Drusha like snowflakes.
Typical, Drusha said.
Who are you talking to?
Asked Max, stepping through the back door.
Myself, said Drusha.
Ready?
I'm supposed to be a Magos biologist, Germaine, but every day I realize I know nothing about anything. You sure you want me for this?
Not really, she said. But we're going anyway.